Over the years that I have taken an interest in all aspects of Spanish history, from the very ancient into the very recent, one of these areas that I've taken a particular interest in is the period when the American military had a presence, the armed forces had a presence in Spain during the 20th century, during the Franco period, and somewhat in a couple of decades after that. I guess because, well, it had to do with America, and it had to do with recent history and things that were a little bit more tangible to me because it had a lot to do with the Cold War. This period I'm talking about runs from about the middle of the 1950s to the early 1990s. And this was when the United States had access and use of several bases in Spain as part of an agreement with the Franco regime. Both the regime and the United States had a common enemy, which was communism. And together they joined forces and helped each other mutually. That meant that the United States would overlook the fact that Franco's government was an authoritarian dictatorship with no democracy. But as long as they could get their bases and their forces in there, it was, in their opinion, the lesser of two evils. And as a result, there were Air Force bases outside of Madrid, in Torrejón, in Zaragoza, outside of Seville, in Morón, and also the naval base out in the province of Cádiz called Rota, Rota. In fact, there are still some, there is some military, American military presence there to this day. But there were other places too. And anyway, I've talked about a number of these stories related to this period. I mentioned the Palomares nuclear bomb incident, where there was a mid-air collision while they were refueling a B-52, which was carrying four nuclear bombs. There was an accident. Both planes came crashing down off the coast of Almeria, in Spain, and on the coast, and the four bombs came down, and none of them detonated, thank God. But one of them or two maybe had produced a bit of what they call a dirty bomb, so there was some radiation there. That story is quite famous, actually, and you can see that on one of my podcasts. I also have talked about an old tracking location station in the north of Spain, in the very northern tip of Spain, in the region of Galicia, which I had no idea existed until about a year ago. I actually saw it with my own eyes from a distance without realizing what it was. That was in Estaca de Bares, and so on. There have been a lot of other stories I've mentioned. And speaking of stories I'd never heard of, I'm going to tell you one today about a plane carrying 24 members of the American Armed Forces that crashed into the mountains just north of Granada. And this happened in 1960. Now, I don't want to give away any spoilers yet, so I'll just tell you what happened. But this is an incredible story. And once again, surprising because no one's ever really heard about this story. I've now told of several Spaniards, even a couple of Spaniards who were quite into history, and they didn't recall this, and it's an amazing story. So this, as I said, took place in 1960, or maybe I didn't tell you that, but that's when it took place, on March 8th, which is my daughter's birthday, or one of my daughter's birthday, and also the day of the International Day of Women. And that is when one of the most remarkable aviation rescue stories in the history of Spain unfolded, high in the Sierra Nevada mountains, in a town or just above a village called Jerez del Marquesado. Jerez is the town in Cádiz where they make sherry, and you spell it the same way, with the only difference being the accent over the first E. So they say Jerez, and this is in Granada. And what happened was a U.S. Navy Douglas R5D3 Skymaster, which was a Navy version of the DC-4, was carrying 24 people on a flight from Naples, Italy, to the U.S. Naval base at Rota that I was telling you about. It's my understanding that many of them were Marines, and some of them were members of the Marines basketball team, which made them taller than usual, and I'll tell you why that's important in a second. Anyway, this plane was forced to make an emergency landing on the slopes of this mountain called El Picón de Jerez, excuse me. And that peak has an altitude of approximately 2,600 meters, about 8,500 feet. It was lower than that, just a little bit lower. But the fact that it was so high up and it was still winter time, it was covered with a very nice thick blanket of snow, and that certainly was a good thing because it sort of cushioned the landing and allowed all 24 people on board to survive, at least the immediate landing, which was nothing less than a miracle. Now, one of my questions was what happened? It doesn't seem to be, or at least why that plane did that, is it's hard to know. It's hard to get an accurate or at least a consistent story. It seems that the aircraft was forced to make a belly landing for unknown reasons. It might have clipped one of the mountains nearby and realized it was in an emergency situation. It was true that visibility was terrible because the weather was terrible at the time. There was a storm going through, and or maybe the pilots just got a little bit disoriented and decided to make an emergency landing on the mountainside instead of trying to get around it and crashing into the side. The aircraft would end up being destroyed beyond repair, but at least at the time, it was in good enough shape that, as I mentioned before, no one had been killed. People had been injured, had different degrees of injuries, but everyone was alive. Now, what happened here? Two members of the plane, I think a crew member and one of the passengers, managed to descend from the crash site, and they reached Jerez del Marquesado below several hours later. Now, despite this deep snow, the rugged terrain, the terrible weather, and the story goes, and I've heard this several times. I'm not sure if it's true. I love this story, or this part of the story. I'd like to think it is true. You never know, but it's possible, quite possible. That is, when they got there, because they couldn't speak Spanish, and at that time, no one in the town could speak English. Well, what they did is they took a newspaper and they folded it into the shape of an airplane and sort of mimicked the crash. And I guess basically pointed into the mountains to help people realize what was happening. And it seems logical because these were two Americans in American uniform. Who had come down from the mountains. There would be no reason for them to be up there at all. In fact, I read another story about a shepherd who saw them on the way down and they were calling to him. And I think one of the passengers was one of the basketball players. So you saw this really tall guy wearing a funny uniform and speaking in English. And the guy sort of ran off thinking they were from outer space or something like that. That I'm not sure is true, but that's what I've heard. Anyway, there was a bit of discussion on what to do. It was high up from the town. There was a terrible storm going on, classic sort of late winter storm with rain, sleet, heavy snow, higher up, strong winds. And now these are people from the country and the rugged people, but as I said, they probably would never go up there during the winter because they didn't have the right equipment to do that. So that's probably apparently there was the debate. Some people said they weren't going to go up there and risk their lives. But a group of about five or six decided to accept that mission, and they walked for hours and hours and hours. Now they knew the mountains up there, they knew the terrain, and they more or less knew where the aircraft was because apparently A number of flares had been fired up into the sky, so they had a pretty good idea where it was. And a few hours later, or I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 hours later, they managed to get to the aircraft and find that everyone was alive. It was a very tough climb. You listen to the reports by the people who did it, who are sort of still surviving a few years ago. I'm not sure if they're alive now, but they will tell you that it was not an easy climb. The weather was horrible, and they didn't know what they were going to find. Apparently, members of the local police force, the Guardia Civil, also participated, although it's hard to say if they were in that first group or came soon afterwards. Anyway, they had to make some decisions, basically triage decisions, who needed to go down first. There was one man who I think had a severed backbone or something like that. He was in the worst shape, and they put him on a stretcher and took him down, and along with several others who were could go down pretty much under their own power. And I think one of the Guardia Civil officers stayed there, as well as one or two members of the town residents, and stayed there and took care of the remaining passengers who were in the plane. And for the next 2 or 3 days, hundreds of local volunteers from that town and around the place, also members, personnel from the Spanish Air Force base at Armilla, climbed into the mountains carrying food, blankets, stretchers, and medical supplies. The operation took, as I said, took place during this snowstorm with freezing temperatures, darkness, and high winds. Rescuers were forced to traverse steep ravines and icy slopes. It was perilous, and a number of them were injured during the operation. I believe something like 12 required hospital treatment. And let's not forget that this is 1960, so communication was extremely limited. Many of the residents of Jerez were going up there with their ordinary rural clothing to protect them from the freezing conditions. One man who interviewed taught the Americans how to stuff their pants into their socks to keep the snow from getting onto their skin. Classic sort of country know-how, and it helped create this bond between the local people and the survivors of the accident. So, despite all these complications, all these dangers, every one of the 24 Americans was brought safely down the mountain and survived. So, in a way, it was like a very shortened version of the Society of the Snow story, except for the fact that they were located rather quickly. No one died. No one had to resort to tough decisions to survive. And everyone survived. And that was an amazing thing. The Americans expressed their gratitude in very many direct ways. A few months later, the U.S. ambassador to Spain, John Davis Lodge, visited the town to thank the townspeople personally for their bravery. And over the decades, the U.S. Navy has maintained contact with the community, recognizing the rescue as an outstanding example of international friendship. What were some of the material benefits that they received? Well, for example, the wreckage from the plane. The town was allowed to keep that wreckage instead of letting it waste away up on the mountainside. It was taken down little by little and was sold as scrap. Now this is true. I mean, what I don't know is I thought at first it meant it was just sold to private hands, but I think the government actually took most of that metal. And with the money that they made, the town was able to make improvements to infrastructure. Okay, paving streets and especially providing a water system. So they had running water in the town, and apparently was the first to have that, what would have been back then a luxury in the region. So that was an important benefit for the people of Jerez del Marquesado. And then interviewing other people, they would tell you that they received the classics from that period, from the 50s and 60s, from the Americans, powdered milk, lots of powdered milk. They'd receive like a ration every month, cookies and things like that. Also cheese, they'd call it the orange cheese or the yellow cheese, which must have been that big block of American cheese. It must have been quite different from them for them. But hey, it was free food coming in at a time where a lot of these towns that were far away from the cities didn't always get that, and they needed that, and so it was well received. So those were some of the benefits. In 2010, they celebrated the 50th anniversary with some of the surviving crew members returning to the village alongside U.S. diplomats and naval officers to honor the rescuers. Many of them had probably died by then, others hadn't, and a monument commemorating the event was unveiled. What they do have every year is the hike from the town up to the site of the accident, and they call it the Solidarity Route of the Plane or something like that. It's a very terrible translation, but that's basically what it is. It's a hiking event that retraces the route taken by the rescuers to the crash site and back. And so that can still be done. I think it's the first Saturday in September. I am not ruling out that possibility. That way I can see the town and see a little bit more about what happened there. As I said, this is just one of those stories that no one talks about, no one mentions, and yet it's remembered less as an aviation disaster than as an extraordinary humanitarian achievement, right? Against overwhelming odds, an isolated mountain community risked its own safety, and that's a fact. I mean, those people went up there who did make that trek up there were certainly risking their lives. And these were people who had their families, their wives, their kids to save 24 strangers. And it wouldn't have been the most heroic, but somewhat understandable for people to say, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to think of myself and my people. But others didn't. Others said, let's go up there. We have people who need our help. Let's go and get them. The successful rescue remains one of the most celebrated episodes in the modern history of Jerez. Although it was funny because they interviewed a man who said, 50 years later, he's like, yeah, I don't think about it too much anymore. It's just one of the many things that happen in this world, in this life. But for the town, it was certainly an extraordinary moment, and it continues to be commemorated. And I think even though the rest of the country and the rest of the world don't remember it, I think it's a moment, it's an event, a lasting symbol of courage and cooperation between the two countries, or between any two countries, which deserves to be remembered. And that'll be all for our podcast today, brought to you by Brian Spaindemain. Please feel free to leave us any comments, because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spaindemain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture, and Spanish food, and wine, and everything. And you can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided on our website and below. And you can check us out on our YouTube channel, one that we're starting to try to get going a little bit more. There's a lot going on, so we can't always get there as fast as we'd like to. And support us by subscribing. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.